Hey, listeners, thanks for tuning into the podcast. I just want to take a moment to mention the podcast sponsor, retrogamestore.com.au. Head over there for all your Game Boy refurbish and repair needs. Screens, shells, buttons, all the bits and pieces. And there's a complete custom build made to order service as well. Also, plenty more retro gaming goodness like video cables, display stand and power supplies, controllers, etc. And you can add the code PixelPie at checkout to get 10% off your order. Also, take a moment to say if you enjoyed this episode and haven't already, give it a subscribe or follow and a review where you can. And maybe you want to recommend the Pixel Pie podcast to anyone you know that would enjoy it. That'd be really appreciated. So thanks for listening. And now let's get on with the show. Hello, Mason. How you doing, bud?
Hey, pretty great.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Thanks for your time. I seem to be kind of being able to chisel time out of the busy lives of dads in the community recently. I'm speaking to Matt from Jelly Belly, and his eyes are hanging out. And you've just finished up bath time with your little one, and so sort of like what 6 or 7 p.m. on a Friday, and it's. I was just stuffing my lunch in my face when you were like, I'm ready. And it's like midday the next day. So it's always so cool to see if the world is really out there. And dad life, huh?
Yeah, no, it's been crazy. My little girl's 15 months old. So she's a bundle of joy, but definitely a lot of work. But I mean, it's definitely worth it.
Yeah. This is your first, is it?
Yeah. It's our first new parents.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. A year in, but still feel very new.
My daughter's 10 and I still feel new. It's incredible.
Never goes away.
No, it doesn't. I guess the main reason why you and I we know of each other in the universe is through Game Boys. And you're on Instagram as Game Boys in the Wild, and that's pretty cool. It's definitely some of the in my feed, when your stuff turns up in my Instagram feed, I can almost always tell it's yours without even seeing who posted it. There's just I don't want to sort of blow too much smoke up your butt.
That's good to hear.
There's a real class about it. And I do see others you've encouraged the hashtag Game Boys in the Wild too, which is pretty cool. Like, you know, to use your own name and allow people just to take it on, because some people are like, well, you don't want to be, that's my name, but that's something I like about yourself and many other people in the game and what the community is like. It's just, I'm just laying tracks and enjoying my journey, and whoever wants to jump on, just show us what you got sort of thing. So
that's definitely something that I personally, it's almost a source of pride, I guess. It's just like, people are using this hashtag that, you know, there'd been a few posts, hashtag Game Boys in the Wild, but yep. I see people posting on it all the time. I used to try to keep up with it, but not anymore. So it's definitely something that I'm just really happy that people have kind of taken to that. And definitely if anybody wants to use it, go right ahead. I haven't trademarked it or anything.
It's funny actually, because I think it was sort of like when I first noticed, or I first knew of you, and I sort of got my GameCube and stuff, and I started listening to a podcast. I think it's like the GameCube was cool. And I think going back through a few of their episodes, because they're pretty decent young guys, and just talking about various games and everything. So you're sort of going back and, oh, I wonder if I want to play that game. And there was like something from you, a contribution. I was like, I know that dude. When you start to sort of see names. I mean, I'm not a big internet type. I use it for what I want. I don't hang out in there. So when I do kind of bump into something that I'm familiar with, you know, sort of concentric circles of different hobbies or semi-hobbies, I was like, oh, yeah, that's cool. So you obviously must have a bit of love for the GameCube as well then.
Oh yeah, no, I definitely huge fan of the GameCube. And I mean, you can see I try to sprinkle in GameCube content. It people don't tend to like it as much, but I don't really care, honestly. I like to do GameCube stuff every now and then. And I like to collect for GameCube, which is a real problem for my wallet.
Yeah, awesome, I'm cheating. Yeah. I'm cheating. I've got the GC loader in there, so you know, it's like all my other consoles. It's either an EverDrive or an ODE of some sort. So yeah, the GameCube seems to be bang in the middle of and I guess it's semi, well, like it's lack of success, you know, and so like there wasn't 3 million copies of everything sold, and therefore it's just harder to find, and that's kind of what's pushing it up. And you know, it's that sort of pre-Wii. So good luck to you.
Yeah, no, it's honestly, it's people that are my age. You know, I'm only 25. I'm still pretty young. And I you know, as a young teenager, the GameCube was everything. It's
right.
I played it all the time and grew up with those games, and then like anyone else, kind of moved on from that, and then was like, oh my gosh, why did I sell all those? I need them back, you know. So I'm stuck in this conundrum that a lot of 20 somethings are stuck in, of like trying to reclaim all their childhood. But yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah and unfortunately, it's, as we've all noticed, you know, the cost of getting back into any hobby is sort of exponential over the last sort of 3 to 5 years, especially the last two. Yeah. But yeah, what it is. So so you're in Colorado, is that correct?
Yeah, Denver, Colorado.
Man, I would love to come up to Colorado. I'm a mountain biker, pretty mad on it at the moment. I've sort of, when you have kids, things start to get pushed aside. And just in the last 2 or 3 years, well actually we visited California for 4 weeks, end of 2019, and we dropped into Santa Cruz twice. And both times I got a guided ride with a local there, and hired a bike from the bike shop, and just went, oh, I remember how good it is to be so focused on something that if I stop thinking about it and think about the world, I might die or hurt myself at least. You know, that we gamers talk about that sense of flow where all you're focused on is doing it. So yeah, and I watched so many really crazy videos of just Colorado and all that area, that part of the country. I could spend probably 6 months hanging out in your neighborhood.
Oh yeah, right? No, I did my undergraduate studies in Utah.
Yeah,
and there's so many because it's interesting. You think of Denver, you think of, you know, kind of like mountains, but we're about an hour away from any of them. But it's really Salt Lake City is where you're right in the mountains, and so I kind of miss Utah sometimes just because, you know, you're about 10 minutes away from a bike trail if you're into mountain biking, and it's something else over there. But I still like Denver too. It's good here too. But
yeah. So yeah. Are you originally from Denver or at least Colorado?
No. So I'm from Arizona actually. So, grew up in Arizona. That's where I met my wife as well. We went to high school together, and then, went to Utah for my undergraduate, and now I'm in Denver for dental school. So hopping all around. Yeah.
So that's the plan. How are you going to be a dentist?
Yeah. Yeah. We'll go back to Arizona for me to practice dentistry, but yeah, I'm in my second year right now. So still have 2.5 more years, just getting really poor, which is really interesting with the hobby that I have.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what it's like.
We could talk about that.
Yeah. I don't know what it's like over there in the US, but over here, I mean, if some of the people that drive the nicest cars in this country are dentists. So maybe your hobby, once you're qualified, maybe your hobby income it'll lift again.
Yeah, no, it'll be, I mean, dental school itself is really, really expensive. I mean, you're looking at anywhere, depending on where you go, $70,000 to $90,000 a year just for tuition, right? And so by the time it's all over, you're like $500,000 in debt. So
that's insane.
It'll be a while before I reap the benefits. But yeah, it's definitely, once you're out, it's definitely a good lifestyle. And but the interesting thing is, and I mean, we can talk about this more if you want. Is
yeah, whatever you want, mate.
For me, it's almost like with this hobby, it's because it's something that is rare, that's hard to get, that is difficult for me to do, it almost makes it more enjoyable. And you hear this from a lot of collectors. It's like, it's the hunt, you know, it's looking for those opportunities to get something that's affordable or to flip something. Like I love, it's not on my Instagram a lot, but I love just flipping stuff, just, you know, refurbishing Game Boys, not even modding, and just flipping them on eBay. And, you know, being on a very strict budget like I am right now makes it so that that's just, it's just a side hobby. And luckily I haven't had to put too much money into all the stuff that you see on my feed, just because I've been able to, it's pretty self-sustaining at this point, which is really, for me, that's the most enjoyable part of it all.
That's clever. I mean, it's really hard to just buy something and sell something here. Like, you'd make $10, because almost every, I say this every episode, but almost every Game Boy you buy locally here, or even like on eBay in Australia, it's about $100.
Yeah.
And even if you open it up and, you know, put a new lens on it, you'd be lucky to get $100 for that Game Boy. So the only flipping you can do is if you buy at least a few, like I've bought a couple from Japan just randomly because I wanted my own builds, and you could grab them for $50, but I don't think many people want them unless they've got an IPS in them. So if you're getting it done and kind of, you know, looking after yourself, then good on you, man. Don't tell anybody your secret.
No, it's, I mean, it's definitely a lot of work, and a lot of times I end up in the red, you know, don't quite make ends meet, but
it's a hobby though, right?
It is a hobby, and that's the thing. It's not, for me, it's never like, oh, I lost all this money, like my family's gonna go under. Like I never use any, because really money is tight for our family right now. It's like I never use personal funds for that. It's all self-sustaining from just an initial investment that I made, you know, a year or so ago. And so I never have to worry like, oh no, I lost money on this Game Boy that I built or whatever. It's just a hobby, right? If it's not about making the money, it's about just keeping it going and, you know, letting go of stuff when I'm ready to let go of it, when I feel like I've taken enough pictures of it.
Yeah.
You know, you see a lot of 3DS consoles on my feed.
I'm just looking at the Samus one right now.
Yeah. Well, that one I still own, but a lot of like those Zelda ones you see.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, that one's not going anywhere. Same with the Hyrule Shield one. That's not going anywhere.
Yeah. That's keep going. Sorry.
No, I was just, a lot of those things, you know, I don't have anymore, because I'll pick them up, take pictures until I'm satisfied, and then flip it, hopefully make a few bucks, and then go on to the next thing.
Yeah. 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 You seem to have quite a few 3DSs. Was that maybe for you, that was the handheld of your generation?
No, actually. So I actually didn't grow up with a handheld gaming console, which is really interesting.
Well, neither did I. I mean, I was there a few years before it, but even in the 80s, I mean, I was in high school in sort of early 80s. So yeah, maybe it was too many girls and parties around by the time the Game Boy came out. I don't know. But yeah, I can understand what you're talking about. So you didn't have any handhelds when you grew up?
No, yeah. The only handheld I can remember was actually a Game Boy Advance that I had growing up that I linked up to the GameCube, because my favorite game of all time is Zelda Wind Waker. And there's a GameCube Game Boy Advance link function in that game. And you need to use that if you're going to completely beat the game. So I had one just for that reason. And I think I had like another, I don't even remember what sort of game it was, just some weird licensed game. And that was my only exposure to handhelds prior to getting into this whole process.
Yeah. So you didn't manage to, is it Four Swords where you can plug in like four GBAs and.
Yeah.
Have you ever done that one?
I haven't done all four because I only had one link cable, but me and my brother, because I believe you can play it with a GameCube controller and then the second player is on the GBA.
Right.
And so me and I have three younger brothers, so we played a lot of games together. So we'd play that sometimes, but yeah, just because of that, because I do come from a family with other with other kids. It just always made sense for my parents to just do a console with Smash Bros. And that's what we
did. Well, the GameCube was designed for the Welch family, wasn't it? Really, like the four boys there.
Absolutely.
So you got some Smash Brother hours under your belt then.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, this Christmas, I'll go home to Arizona, hang out with my brothers, and you know we're going to be playing Smash Ultimate.
That's pretty good.
Still to this day, and it's fun because that's one that, you know, my wife enjoys to play Smash Brothers as well, and it brings people together pretty well. And so that's at this point, that's probably my most intense gaming that I do is when I go home, I'll play Smash Bros with my brother. So if anybody listening wants to play Smash, just shoot me a message. We'll put together a room or something.
I've tried to play stuff on my own and with my daughter with like GameCube version. I think we ran up the Wii version as well. And I just button mash, man. I'm terrible with any of those sorts of games. I'm like, where's the jump? Where's the fight? All right, I'm just going to try mini combos of those two buttons and sticks and stuff. So I need to sit with someone sometime and just say, this is what you do. And I always get Kirby because you can kind of almost just never get kicked off. You just like fly back up all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's me. And I think Kirby's one of the weirdest game characters ever because he's got this I don't even know. Does anybody know what gender is? But he's kind of cute. Yeah. Let's just call him. Kirby's kind of cute and fluffy and stuff, but he like consumes other creatures and takes on their power. It's pretty dark.
And you could go dark places there.
Yeah, with cute Kirby. So it always, I'm like, yeah, there's a side of Kirby people aren't acknowledging. I think I need to be that guy. Yeah. Yes. Absolutely. So when did you start sort of just picking up the handhelds then and the Game Boys? I mean, you've got, like I said, you've got 3DSs and a whole bunch of different stuff. When did this kind of like happen?
So I grew up like any other kid. You know, I just got a game console for Christmas. Mm. I started out with the N64, got like, you know, your run of the mill games, went on to GameCube. But the interesting thing was I always had every console kind of later. So from the get go, I was always into kind of retro consoles. So I got my Nintendo 64, I think in like 2002, which I think is the year the GameCube came out. So, and I didn't get my GameCube till the Wii came out. And then I got my Wii, like I didn't get a Wii till much later. Like I was like in high school and our family got a Wii finally. So like I was always kind of a late bloomer with the consoles. And then we just never really got into to handhelds in my family. But I always kind of, because of that, I always had a chip on my shoulder because I could never buy games new, right? I could never go to the store and buy a game for the GameCube because they didn't sell GameCube games. So I always had kind of the sensibility of like, I need to go on eBay or I need to find what I want elsewhere. And always feeling like, okay, the older stuff is way better than the newer stuff. Like, you know, Wind Waker is way better than Twilight Princess. Like, why are you like it? Just as far as, you know, just gaming goes. So then I think that I just kind of still have that mentality today of just like the older stuff is better. You know, the Super Nintendo is way better than the Switch, like obviously. But then I, you know, left home, went to college. And obviously, you know, I didn't bring all my, at the time I considered, you know, I didn't bring my baby toys, didn't bring my kid stuff to college. And then I remember coming home one year for Christmas and I just saw like all my old stuff. And, you know, my brothers hadn't really been using it. You know, they were playing on the Xbox or whatever.
Yeah.
And I grabbed a Nintendo 64 controller and, you know, those things are transparent. And I saw a worm inside,
like a caterpillar like or something.
Yeah, a little creature had burrowed into the controller. And I was like, oh my gosh, like this isn't being taken care of. This isn't being preserved.
Yeah.
And that was it. That was the beginning of the end.
The first thing you opened was a 64 controller with a worm in it.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a funny story.
Clean that up and then immediately grabbed the 64 GameCube and Wii and was like, okay, that's it. Like, I'm taking these with me. You guys have your Xbox, you have your new stuff. I'm taking this stuff because this stuff is better.
Yeah.
And I still don't have, you know, just with school and stuff, don't have a lot of time for gaming. But for me, it was just like the preservation of it all. Absolutely. was what I wanted. Cause it's like, I have the same Nintendo 64 that I opened up on Christmas and was super excited about, cause I was going to play Smash Brothers on it, you know? And that preservation is really, really driven it all. And then I'd say I got into the handhelds. My wife was pregnant. It was the height of the pandemic. It was like summer 2020. I just finished my undergrad, was waiting to start dental school. So really had nothing to do, absolutely nothing. And I just previously kind of rekindled this interest in those retro consoles. And so I asked my wife, like, hey, can I spend $20 and buy a broken Game Boy, see if I can fix it? And that $20 has led us here. So And then just kind of went down the rabbit hole. I'd say I definitely mod consoles, but I also collect. I do refurbish. I kind of try to do it all. I've definitely gotten into the photography of it all.
Yeah.
And
would you say primarily it's about, like you said, the preservation and collecting, as opposed to, because you said you flip, but you're not the type to buy 30 consoles, working them A, because you don't have the time, and then kind of sell them off and then make a bunch of money and kind of keep the cycle going. You're kind of more of a, I get the impression, more of an opportunistic kind of modder, more to suit your purpose as opposed to the market.
I like that, opportunistic. I definitely don't. You see bigger accounts like Game Changer or like Game Over Customer. Those guys have an awesome hustle going right now.
And yeah, they're like putting food on their table.
Props to them for doing that. Yeah. But for me, it's much more like, hey, I'm just going to do what I want to do. Occasionally you'll see me do like a raffle on my page. Like, hey, I've got all these consoles I've modded. Does anybody want one? And then eventually I'll end up selling them on eBay. But when I do sell on eBay, I always try to keep them really affordable. So they sell within a day or two, you know. I don't want to, I just want to get rid of it at that point. It's interesting because I tend to be kind of bipolar with it. I go back and forth between I'm going to get everything and keep everything.
Yep.
And I'm going to sell everything. But I think kind of the happy spot that I've found is, you know, I'll collect things that I'm interested in at the time. Like you can see, I'm just coming out of a 3DS phase kind of, and I'll collect everything of what I want. So like a goal that I had was to collect every Zelda 3DS, and quite a while ago, I think it was almost a year ago, I had all of them. And so I took a picture, you know, got my picture of it and then started selling them. So I feel like at this point, my account kind of serves as that. My account is my collection at this point.
Yeah. Right?
The pictures that I take, the things that I capture are pictures of things that I've owned. And that for me, for a lot of these things, is enough, right? To see like, I had that cool 3DS. I still have a 3DS that I can play. I don't need 20. So, you know, I can pass it on to somebody for hopefully a reasonable price.
Yeah. I mean, I just struggle with the investment. I mean, I'll see just a Game Boy, and it's clearly it's an old Game Boy that someone owned that's like $80, and you sort of go, geez, you could take it, but then I just don't have the motivation to take it. The 3DS stuff is some of the 3DS stuff is so amazing. I don't know, maybe I don't look at Switches enough, but you know, that lack of kind of front cover. I mean, the front cover on the 3DS just made it so. You just do so much arty, cool stuff with it, eh?
The special editions were amazing.
Yeah, I mean, that Samus thing, I've seen that come up a few times, and it's the price of a Switch. And I'm kind of like, I have a 3DS, which serves me fine, and I don't need it. But, yeah, man. And it's also the when I see them online, my concerns with a lot of the 3DSs are that they're not legitimate. They're just got, like, a replacement fake shell on them and things like that, and it'd be very easy to get duped.
Yeah, I
need to know someone's got one that I know. It's like, yeah, I'm moving it on. Someone like yourself, and go, I'm moving it on. This is the price, and understand that I'm paying for, I'm getting what I'm paid for. And so it's, I'm just, I don't know, just a skeptical old man, I guess. Your kind of favorite picture of mine at the moment, which actually sort of spurred me on quite a bit recently, is it's a image of all the Play It Loud DMGs with the white one at the front. I think you're missing the black one.
Oh, yeah.
But the white and the blue, the black ones
in the back left corner.
Oh, hiding. Yeah, because you can't see the image.
Because I pulled up that picture, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just barely back there.
Yeah, well, you've got them all sitting in the grass there as well. Oh, what's going on there? Were they? Don't know. But either way, the blue and the white ones, they're the ones I don't have yet. The blue one, I think, is Europe and Japan, and the white one was Japan only. And yeah. I just need to do it. I'm kind of paying off a new bike at the moment, and I just, that kind of extra $150 a month used to be my pick up something every month. You know, you can start to sort of load up. But yeah, I mean, they're out there. So, but every time I see that picture, I'm like, damn it, I need to get that done.
That was my last project, was all the Play It Loud DMGs.
Yeah.
And it's worth it, man. You gotta,
yeah.
I'd say pull the trigger. That blue one is stunning. And same with the white, but like the best colors are the most rare, and it's, oh
yeah. Yeah, definitely. Nice. I'm going to do it. Like, probably just after Christmas, things will settle down. I'll have a few extra. I'll have my bike paid off. But, and it's a matter of sort of like, I think I can get them both from Japan from a pretty decent seller over there. So I do want it. But it just, when you see them all together, it's just really neat. It's nice to just be kind of talking to someone that's just a collector. There's so many people modding, and that's great. But sometimes I'm like, let's all just slow down and just appreciate it, because I can't keep up. Damn it. There's a new screen every like 4 weeks, and then it's a new bezel, and then it's a new this, a new that. It's how people are making a dollar. Craig from retrogamestore.com, though, I talked to him about it, because we just chat about stuff randomly. I'm like, how do you do it? Because you might order 10 screens, and then like 3 weeks later, everybody else wants this screen, then you're left with seven from the previous. And that's, you know, there must be just buckets of stuff in the shops, the online shops, that just keep moving stuff on, you know, trying to keep up.
Yeah.
How do you go about it? Like, do you have kind of like a screen? Like, is it the funny playing RetroPixel for the DMGs or whatever? And you're just like, you know what? That just always works. And I'm just going to get by that one all the time if I'm going to flip something and kind of juicy it up a bit.
So, yeah. I mean, honestly, when I flip stuff, it's mostly just me refurbishing broken consoles. I rarely will mod stuff to just flip it. Just because I found like it's difficult to, for me at least, to price like a modded console. Because for me, like, I still, you know, sometimes those consoles give you issues, you know, like especially with the new funny playing laminated display Game Boy color screens. I've had a lot of issues with those, honestly. Sometimes it works just fine, sometimes it's like it's real finicky. And so like for me, it's not worth it to like spend hours doing that. And so I've just never been big on selling mods. I don't know what it is. I think it's just like it's more time consuming, and there's less of a market for it almost than people who want to buy just original consoles, at least the people who I'm selling to on like eBay and stuff. Like I find that I'm able to, if I'm looking to sell something, I'm able to sell just original Game Boy stuff much more easily. And so maybe that's another reason why I'm into preserving kind of what you were saying, like the original vision of what the Game Boy was. And then modding is more like, I want to build this cool thing that I think is cool, and then if somebody wants to buy it, great. If not, like I'm not planning on making any money on this, right? Unless you know, people reach out for commissions, for example, like, and I say, okay, like let's look at how much the parts cost, you cover shipping, and then I'll take like a $20 fee to build it, you know. So my commissions are pretty cheap, but I don't
almost doing a favor often. for the joy of seeing them happy with it.
Yeah.
Well, and if it's, you know, if it's somebody that I don't know that I've never met, I'm going to be like, hey, like, let's talk a little bit. Let's like, I'm not going to just do it for some random person. So like the last one that I did was for at Mr. Game and Switch. I don't know if you've ever seen. Yeah. Really, really cool guy. Hasn't done any modded Game Boys. I don't know how we got talking about it, but he's like, yeah, I've never modded a Game Boy. I'm like, let me do a Game Boy for you. So I just barely finished building him a Game Boy Pocket, and I'm going to send it to him. And it's like, I just was like, hey, you just cover the cost. And like, this is a hobby for me. So I'm just going to build it. So that's, I don't know. I'm not good enough. I think I'm not like those like Game Changer mods or Game Over customs to like go out and be selling these. For me, it's more just like, hey, you know me, if there's an issue with it, you can, you know, I'm I'll help you out, you know. So
yeah,
that's maybe part of the reason why
I've had a couple opportunities to help people out, and they've sort of gone, hey, can you do this? I'm like, yeah, I could. And then like I instantly say, oh, look, I'd love to help you out. And then as soon as I start thinking about, like, I've done a few pocket IPSs and they've done really well. I've done a couple of the DMGs, which are like easy because you're just replacing the whole front board.
Yeah, those DMGs are awesome.
Yeah, it's just super rewarding because you really are getting like an easy result. I just recently did a color and it went okay, but there was a lot of cutting. You know, it's hard to kind of
colors are hard.
It's hard to kind of work out. Like I bought the screen and it was hard to work out exactly which screen I had. So I'm sort of looking through instructions and stuff. So if you're kind of just doing it every now and then for yourself, like I've modded 1, 2, 3, like about, let's say half a dozen, right? Pocket, DMG, GBAs, and GBC. So I've done sort of some one of everything. But, you know, by the time I get back to doing one, the world's moved on and I either can't get those screens or get a new one. And destroys me the most is just how much of this do I have to cut away. And I really love the OSDs, how you can move the screen left and right. I've got a color that I put a screen in, had a few disasters with, and no matter how hard I try, I can't kind of get the screen to be just dead center. Bit of OCD. The OSD is just so good that you can just go doink 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 and just push it over or push it down and stuff. So and then I'll say to someone, yeah, I'll do that for you, and then I start thinking about it, I'm going, oh, what if I blah, blah, and all of a sudden my $0 favor is going to cost me $65 because I'm such a chump and so inconsistent. And they usually end up just getting back to them and saying, look, I'll tell you what, I know someone that does this like day in, day out. Just to have a chat with them. It'll still be like, it'll only be a few extra bucks. And I just don't want that feeling of having to do like after sort of build support and stuff and things like that. So I like to be a good Samaritan, but at the same time, I kind of want to just walk to the well, get my water, and go back again sometimes, you know, and with someone else. Yeah, that's really good at it.
We definitely, we're similar in that sense for sure. Cause
I just don't want someone to have a bad experience because of me. Generally.
Yeah. No, I feel that. I definitely feel that. Yeah. And I mean, those colors are, they really are. I'd say of like the original Game Boy line, the color is definitely the one that color and the Game Boy Advance SP. I don't know if you've ever done a SP, even just a shell swap.
No.
For those, the hinge on those things are terrible. And I had like a month where three different people were like, hey, like I did a Game Boy Advance SP for one person, and it was like a Pokemon shell or something. And I just posted it on my story. And then like three people reached out and were like, hey, like, can I get one of those?
Right.
And I did them and they turned out fine, but it was hours of working with these hinges. It was terrible. So that and the Game Boy Color, if you want to commission for a Game Boy Advance SP or Game Boy Color, go elsewhere. Cause shop's closed.
Yeah.
DMGs.
Well, this is probably why then one of your posts is this is my favorite game, but what is yours? And it's an SP unhinged. You're like, yes, no hinges.
Yeah. Those, and the thing is, those boxy pixel hingeless are super easy to build. Right. It is like I mean, you can trick them out with like a headphone jack and USB-C charging. I don't normally mess around with that. I have yet to really dive into that. I plan on it at some point, but like those things literally are just drop in. It's easier than a DMG, I'd say. It's quite simple. The thing is, it costs as much as a Switch. That's the issue.
Yeah. The Boxy Pixel stuff's so gorgeous. Like they do the you know, like the DS, they do like the macro kit and obviously the unhinge other stuff. And I'm like, you know, one day when I've just got a spare $1,000 to spend on Game Boy shells, I'll put in a Boxy Pixel order, you know. Such gorgeous stuff, but it would cost me a mozza.
Yeah, but it really is the ultimate. I love it. But I've seen, oh man, I forget who's doing it, but somebody's doing a hinge, like a slab that is gorgeous as well.
That's Zypher. Is it Zypher design?
I think it is Zypher. Yeah, no, it is. Yeah, Zypher slab. Yeah.
Yeah, that stuff's pretty cool, huh?
That stuff's awesome too. And I always feel bad, like, because I'm not a part of that at all. They're like still like testing it. So just a few people have like access to that. So I almost feel bad when I like post the hinges on like the ultimate Game Boy. Cause I'm like, there's also like a really cool project that's being done by these other guys. I think there's a few people involved with it, but I'm definitely going to jump on that when the opportunity arises and do a little comparison there.
Yeah.
It looks really cool.
Do like the slab. He's also just recently started like a DS slab design, which looks pretty bloody awesome too. I mean, I'm not sure how these designs are free to print. I'm just looking at the slab one. But I think you'd probably want to do like a resin print. I then get caught up in things like the bezels. So I've still got to buy a bezel from the UK. So I think I was going to do like my own macro and I looked at the bezel and it was like the bezel was still going to cost me $30. So it's like, I need someone in Australia to start stocking really cool stuff. So I make them pay for the shipping kind of thing. Yeah. So people do some cool stuff. It's a
tough place.
I try not to whinge, but it does sort of makes it a little more challenging. That's all. Yeah. It's all about commitment, isn't it? I mean, like I said, I've got other hobbies. So yeah. What do you think has been your sort of most rewarding build ever? Like, do you have a favorite build that just, you don't stare at it, but you glance across the room and you go, don't tell the others, but you're still my favorite.
Oh, so this is funny, but it's actually just a DMG. And it looks, I think it's my, if you look at my account, it's my post from like 2 days ago. It's just like a normal looking just DMG.
Just the great with the Zelda Link's Awakening screen.
Yeah. I love that one. It's got a USB-C charging unit on the back.
Right.
And it's like an original clean juice shell. Yeah, it's a clean juice. Yeah. And it's an original shell, original buttons, and it's like minty clean, but it's got that V4 RIPS IPS screen in it. And it's just, because my very favorite form factor for a Game Boy is the DMG.
Yeah.
And even today I was giving Natalie the Nerd a hard time, like, hey, like, when are you gonna make it possible for normal people like me to build something like that, you know, put a Game Boy Advance in a DMG, because that's far beyond my capabilities.
Yeah.
That would be the dream, to play Game Boy Advance games on just a DMG form factor. Oh
yeah.
I just love the size of it is perfect.
I have a almost identical build in specs, except mine's the black play it loud shell. And again, everything's original except for the lens and that same screen you were talking about. And it just, you can sort of set the palette up, and if it's the same one, you can set the palette up and you can kind of dim it down. It's just like the way it should have been, but just better, you know. It's and it is nice. It's quite a brick to handle. Yeah. And what's your most
I was just gonna say, that's my absolute favorite, is just that simple little DMG there. That's the one I actually use the most, or the hingeless. The rest of them don't get much use.
Cool. Just sort of dropping back into the console stuff, I see you've picked yourself up a PVM.
Two, in fact. Two. Yeah.
Wow. Look who's bragging now.
I got into flipping PVMs just a while back and quickly stopped because I bought three initially.
Were they bargains or did you pay?
No, they were cheap. Yeah, right. They were cheap. I paid. It was local. The person was like old CRT TVs, and I went up and picked three for about $100.
Oh my lord.
Really quite nice, and I'm like, sweet, I'm gonna sell these things. And so I sold one of the 9 inches, and after shipping I'd like lost money almost. Okay, maybe these are for me. So I'm still working out which one of it, because you know I don't have a ton of space to like display all this stuff or keep this right now. So I'm like debating, like, do I keep the 13 inch because it's a bigger screen, or yeah, so I've got a 13 inch and a 9 inch right now. And like most things on my feed, those are liable to disappear at any moment. But for right now, they're too expensive for me to sell. And so I'm just enjoying them. And they are, wow, just fantastic.
So you really do, like, when you sit down and you sort of, you know, look at a GameCube through one of these, it's amazing, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, and I mean, the issue was I really do like playing GameCube games still. My wife and I the other night like played Pikmin.
yeah
Just, you know, that's what you do when you're married. You stay up all night and play Pikmin. It's great.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And you try to put it on those HD TVs and, you know, modern TVs, and it just doesn't work. The lag is so bad. The image is terrible. And so with a 13 inch PVM, you know, you can put it kind of at the foot of your bed somewhere, and that's, you know, not too far off to see. And it's so much fun. And the image is so perfect. And that's how I grew up playing it. It was on a little tiny CRT television. And so it just brings me back.
Yeah. That is awesome. Does your wife does she play? I mean, it's obviously a bit more challenging now that you've got a bubs and someone's always on shift, but do you guys game together a bit?
Yeah, so we have a Switch and we play a lot of Animal Crossing.
You just run the same island together, sort of thing.
Yeah. She's in charge of the island. I'm just a resident there, but we work hard on our island, and that's we've been doing that for about a year now, and it's been super fun. But then we'll do, like, we played Luigi's Mansion for Halloween.
Yeah,
we'll do, and it's only every now and then, maybe 2 or 3 times a month, we'll pull out the Switch and play. But when we get home with family a lot as well, we'll play the Switch. But she's a good sport about it. She didn't grow up with all this like I did, but she's taken to it pretty well and is supportive of me doing it. So I really appreciate that about her.
Yeah. It's important that you have a something else in your life too. I know a lot of people that they work hard and don't play anything at all. Like, their life is just work, work, work. And as much as you love your family, you do need that time to just sort of like decompress and walk away. And it doesn't always have to be like a whole weekend away with the boys, you know, in the forest. It can just be a couple of hours on a weekend just to kind of, you know, it all depends on your personality too. If you're able to do that, some people seem to think they can't stop. I think they just haven't been shown how wonderful it can be.
Yeah, no, I definitely feel that, because for me, it's like, dental school is very, very rigorous. You know, you're going at least 8 to 5 every day, sometimes longer. And then, you know, it's just developing, you know, the hand skills, the knowledge of it all. Mm. So being able to have that really just like a nice place to go. And really that's what this whole account has been for me, is just like, you know, part of the reason why it's Game Boys in the Wild is just, you know, get outside. be outside for a little bit, be in nature, go on a walk and bring a Game Boy in your pocket, and then you know, take a picture of something beautiful. That for me is really a really good just break and a relief from you know, the stresses of being a parent, being a student, husband, you know.
Yeah, it's 100% because of you that I keep an original DMG in the glove box of my car. It's 100% the reason why I built it, to just have it there. And then I can just be like on the way somewhere. Like we went away on holidays for a week, just like a few hours north of here. And we'd pull up at a little toilet stop somewhere and there'd just be a random paddock. And I'd just be like, put it on a fence post and take a photo and just think, yeah, that's kind of cool. You know, it's every time I'm like Game Boy in the wild. So that's thank you. Yeah.
No, well, I've been seeing, you've been posting some really cool stuff recently. I've definitely liked it. I
appreciate it.
I consider myself a connoisseur of Game Boys in the wild.
Like, yeah, definitely. I'm always
on the lookout for them in my feed. So anytime I see them, I'm like, oh, like somebody took their Game Boy outside. I
try to do a few like at the beach and stuff, but they just get sandy and then they can't play them anyway. So it kind of, the lighting has got to be right. But there's some people that take some photos and it's just so kind of, they're so, how do you say, like abstract, or they contrast to each other. But like I'm looking at one of yours now, it's one of the Famitsu clear pockets, just sort of sitting in a tree with a couple of leaves and like that, just the way all the light is kind of the greens and that's bouncing around inside the pocket and off the screen and stuff. Like sometimes it's just like, I think that pocket belongs there in that tree. That is so bizarre. It just doesn't seem odd. Yeah. I take these photos and it's like, no, that looks like a Game Boy in a post. That's stupid. There's certainly an art to it, you know. I can see you kind of use a few little filters here and there, but they just enhance it. And, you know, it's all about the art. So it's not about, you know, you're not measuring anything. You're just sort of saying, how cool is this? But what do you keep, like seven different Game Boys in your car, like in a grab bag or something? Because you seem to have a fairly diverse amount of backdrops, you know, like you're in grass, then you're in some flowers, then you're in some water, and then it's either that or you just live in the most beautiful part of the country. It's like all in your backyard.
So a lot of these are just around my home.
Yeah.
we're really lucky to live right by just like a little green belt that goes through our neighborhood. And there's just like, you know, like a 5 mile long stretch of just grass, trees, foliage, flowers. And so I'll get a lot of pictures that way. And I talk a lot to T, Peg City 8-bit, just about, you know, how he manages his account. Cause he does a great job of like, he has multiple posts every day, you know, keeping things fresh, you know, he runs a really tight ship with his Instagram. And so I've taken a lot of notes out of his book, and he always has a big backlog of content. And so if you look at the thing I posted yesterday, it's like a really close up shot of some buttons or something, like a Game Boy in a, I took that like 6 months ago.
Yes.
And if you scroll down 6 months ago, you can see that same Game Boy in a similar area, but in a different pose. And so a lot of my shots, you know, obviously I still have shot, like the one that I posted today, I took this morning, you know, I was excited about current that one
stuff.
So, but then on the off day, I try to post every day. I'll just post from a photo shoot that I did, you know, 3-4 months ago.
And
it's fresh because, you know, that hasn't been in the feed for a long time.
Yeah.
So it makes so I can then really take advantage if I do go out, you know, if I go to a lake or something, or if I go somewhere new, I can really take advantage of that place with lots of different Game Boys. So I do bring like a backpack of like 4 or 5 Game Boys and try to get as many different types of pictures as possible.
Yeah.
So then I just have, you know, can constantly be sharing something every day.
Mm, that's awesome. I try to do the same thing myself. I'm not very consistent these days. I tend to get a lot more satisfaction just from looking at everybody else's stuff. You know, when I you know, it's very easy to kind of get caught up in the numbers and the likes and the all that sort of stuff. So it's easier for me just to sit back and just observe and enjoy. But I've done that myself, you know, we live near a kind of a creek with a paddock and some horses. And there's at least off the top of my head, there's at least 4 or 5 little sort of like biomes within that paddock. And I can take 3 or 4 Game Boys of various types with me and do the same thing. Walk around with the dog and just pop one down here and pop one down there. And not really sort of take the time to make the shot, but then you go home with 30 or 40 photos and then just sort of go, yep, yep, yep. But then you can just sort of trickle them out. So 100%, that's the best way to do it. Yeah. Do you have particular ones that you just find these just, I mean, I look through all your stuff here and there's no like, gee, that red one turns up a lot or any of that sort of stuff. But there are there some that you sort of like when you're, let's say, posing them, you're like, oh, that just looks so good. I should take more photos of this one. Or are these just all, they're all just your little models and you're like, come on, let's all get out there and let's get this done.
Honestly, the James E. Plays Bayside, I could take pictures of that all day.
Yeah.
I have yet to, because I have a lot of pictures that just don't turn out, that I don't post or whatever. But yeah. I feel like every time I take a picture of that one, it's just like, ooh, wow, that, yeah. I don't know what it is. That and just the classic DMG, I feel like is really quite photogenic.
Yeah.
I also really, like to, and people on Instagram really like the collection pictures. If there's ever more than one Game Boy, it's like those posts always, people tend to really like those for some reason. So
I mean,
I do think there is something nice about seeing like multiple Game Boys. Yeah, it's very like catches your eye and you know, you always wonder like, oh, do I have that one? Or do you know, it's it's fun to see collections, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you've made me kind of like want to spend money by seeing the two Play It Louds I don't have, which is frustrating. Thank you. I can understand that because I think some of my favorite Game Boy photos that I've taken have been like that black IPS DMG I have. And then there's a original shell, the gray brick or whatever. And my wife and I will play Tetris Linked. And, you know, photos of that with the cable connected and Tetris up on the screens, for me, it just feels like not only do I own them, but I'm using them. And I guess there's a real fondness because, you know, I'm using them to play Tetris against my wife, who's getting really good. And there's mixed emotions about those photos, but being able to share the experience. Yeah. So when you do have several, there's one you've got just recently at the two Game and Watches. And I mean, they're just sitting in a bunch of leaves there and they just look so good. Just hanging out, you know, what's the, the ones that you've had, someone, I'm just going to bring them up because I sound like a goose. They got painted like with all the trees and the mountains and stuff. Is it a print or is it a hand painted? There's a GBC and a pocket.
Oh yeah. No, that was a set of three from a while back. Yeah. I've since done giveaways with two of those.
Right.
On my account. So yeah, those are printed by Bluish Squirrel.
Right.
I did those back when I first started the account. I used to use like this logo. I wasn't a huge fan of the colors of it, honestly. Like green and blue, I don't know if those are the most aesthetic colors to like base my account around, but the Game Boy was just like this little pixel art of just like a little mountainside. And then it's just UV printed on the front of I got a pocket, a color and a DMG done. And the pocket and color are especially cool because they have a printed on the actual screen lens Game Boy Wild rather than Game Boy Pocket or color.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So yeah, I had all three of those and I'm like, I don't really need all three of these. So I ended up doing those as a giveaway prizes when I reached whatever follower landmark. And so the DMG and the color are out in the wild where they belong, out with people who will use them. And then the pocket's going to stay with me forever.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Have you got any others that are kind of like, do you have others in mind that people need to look out for that are going to go on be released into the wild? Do you have a backlog?
For giveaways.
Yeah, just in general, like, do you have in your mind, like, even though you're still a collector, you obviously are happy, like you said, to move things on once you've sort of got as much joy from it as you want. Do you kind of have like a section of the room or something and you kind of go, do you have to put it, like, for me, if I'm going to get rid of something, and I've never sold a Game Boy, I've got 30 odd, I've never sold any because I just won't. I don't know what the deal is. But if I did, and it's the same if I have one that's broken, that's maybe faulty and I have to repair it, or I've half done the mod and something's not worked out, I go away in the parts, I've got to put it in a drawer. I can't see it because it'll kind of bug me or upset me. Do you have that kind of thing with yours? Like, do they get kind of put away so you just disconnect from them? I know it sounds odd, but I get very attached to things.
Yeah. Yeah, no, well, and I like I said, I go through phases kind of with it, like where I'm more attached or less attached to certain things.
Yeah.
You know, there are things like I have that that Galaxy DMG that Julianne painted, and like that's never going anywhere. Like that's super, super special from somebody that I really look up to in the community. But then if it's something that I did, like I did this blood splattered Game Boy Color for Halloween. It's like,
oh, I love that.
I'm totally good to give that one away, you know, because it's something I did. It's like, oh, if it's mine, but yeah, go ahead. You know, it's got that one's that it's got metal buttons, it's got a Game Boy Horror lens. Like, so that one for me, I'm like, yeah, that could totally end up being in like a raffle or a giveaway or something. And so it really depends on how special or unique it is, right? And so like for me, like a boxy pixel hingeless, like that's a perfect item to do for like a raffle, because it's you know, it gets somebody an opportunity to get, you know, like a $300 Game Boy for $8, right? So that's that. And I've got another one that I'm building that's going to be all silver. I had somebody who commissioned one but then backed out of it, so I've got the parts for it, so I'll be building that one and then raffling that off to recoup the money that the person backed out on. So, so like just stuff like that, that like, you know, I end up with Game Boys that, you know, I don't need every Game Boy, and I'm definitely not emotionally attached mostly to ones that I build, which is really interesting because I've built and modded quite a few Game Boys now. But I only actually have kind of one of each type of Game Boy really that's modded. Like I have one Game Boy Color that's modded. I guess I have three DMGs that I really hang on to that are modded, but I don't keep too many of the Game Boys that I mod for too long.
Yeah.
If I've modded them myself, if they're just sort from of like someone else.
Daily players, then the rest can kind of move on.
Yeah. Yeah. So like that base side, I didn't actually build that base side. That was from a retro gaming dad, Jordan.
Right.
Because I could, they were out of stock. They didn't have any Bayside cells and he was selling his. So I'm like, hey, I'll buy this from you. And so that for me is like, hey, this is from my buddy Jordan. Like I'm not going to sell it. Like I feel wrong to sell it at this point. Right.
Yeah. Do you have any like collection goals? Like, cause I know you say you come in and they out, like as far as this Game Boys in general, are you pretty happy with where you're sitting in the collection?
Yeah. So I mean, like most people, when I got started in this, like retro future was definitely a big like influence upon me. And I even started my own YouTube channel, and watching that YouTube channel, like I just wanted to be him kind of.
Yeah. I think we're all pretty impressed at some point.
Yeah. And now I've definitely like, you know, I've kind of come into my own, decided like who I'm going to be. And so, you know, I haven't posted in YouTube for about a year or so. But I got way into Game Boy Color collecting because of that. So I've got a lot of like rare Game Boy Colors. I don't post them as often.
Like what?
So I got my Game Boy Color fix of like the transparent, unique Game Boy Color versions. Right. Got my DMGs, got the pockets that I want. And so as far as Game Boys go, I kind of a while back was like, yeah, I'm good. Like I'm happy with the amount of Game Boys I have. So that's why I started working on the 3DS. Now I'm kind of to a point with the 3DS where I'm like, okay, like I like this. And so now I'm getting into fantastic Nintendo 64 consoles, you know, all the different colors of those.
Man, you need to hurry up and get qualified so you can afford all this stuff, because the N64 stuff, that's when it starts to get a little silly, hey?
Yeah, no, well, and once I'm trying to do it smart, I'm trying to do, you know, buy big lots.
Yeah.
Because I've been able to, like, I built out a Nintendo Entertainment System collection on one purchase and broke even, right?
Oh, so wow.
I was able to buy a big lot with two consoles and like a bunch of games. And after I kept track of it all, sold off the rest of the game, sold off the console, and what was left were the games I wanted in a console, and I had broken even. So that's what I'm looking for, are those opportunities to, because for me, like I feel comfortable being able to repair a broken console, or if it has water damage, you know, I can go in and clean. So I feel like being able to buy stuff that most people wouldn't buy is definitely an advantage when it comes to collecting. So I'm just getting started on that. I've got my eye on a Jungle Green, fantastic Nintendo 64. So be on the lookout for the feed. It's going to get some Nintendo 64s coming soon.
What's the fantastic aspect? I'm not aware of that. I'm not really a 64 like on, you know, I don't know much about them.
Yeah, no, well, so Funtastic was kind of like with the Play It Loud, how they, after the Game Boy's original run, they kind of revamped it with a colorful, different colors. And so they have six different transparent colors of Nintendo 64 consoles. So you see the controllers a lot. You'll see like a green controller or a purple controller, and it's clear. But they actually have consoles that go along with those that correspond with the controller colors. So they have like a Jungle Green.
The orange one and the melon.
Transparent.
Yeah.
So my goal is to get all six. They have smoke. Oh, they have grape purple. They have fire orange, watermelon red. So yeah, it'll be... That it's going to be a tough one, but I just barely sold off a bunch of 3DS consoles that I've been collecting.
Yeah.
And so I got some funds now, so we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Have you started collecting Wii consoles? Cause it's something that I sort of see a bit of, you know, you can, there's red ones and we've got a couple of white ones and, you know, there's black and red, and I'm sure there's other special edition versions of the Wii out there. Is that something you've looked at?
Yeah. So, I mean, I really think they only have the, like, actually, like, main releases. They have the white, the red, and the black for Wii.
Yeah.
For me, it's like, I know a guy who's got a red one that I could buy from him at any moment for cheap, and then black one. The Wii's just aren't hard to find yet for me, so I don't... And I don't have the same connection with the Wii, honestly, to really go after it. For me, I know that after I do Funtastic, my next one's going to be finishing off the GameCube.
Right.
Because they have the four GameCube colors. Right. And I've already got, I have my original black one from when I was a kid.
Hmm.
I bought a Japanese orange one that I worked with Game Over to get all Swissified. So it's got the Swiss.
Yeah.
And you know, so you can play whatever game on it.
Yeah.
But I'd like to get like a PAL region one as well, so I can play games like Doshin the Giant or whatever that didn't release in the US.
Yeah.
And I really just need the Platinum and Indigo for those. So, I mean, with other consoles, really, besides the Nintendo 64, there just weren't many, variations, honestly. So really it was the Nintendo 64 that got the biggest, the beefiest lineup there. Similar to the Game Boy Color, I guess.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? I mean, even though they kind of did go, you know, with the Game Boy, I've never really thought about it before, but with the Game Boy, they went, here's a Game Boy, and then they went, and here's a Game Boy in all these colors. And then they did that, like, with the N64 as well. But they didn't do it with the SNES. Like, I guess they were on a different journey than they were just like, let's just punch out a squillion. Or maybe they weren't... Like surely at some point the Game Boy sales started to wane, and I guess just putting them out in different colors just kind of like, you know, just sort of topped it back up to the public vision a bit. You know, what's this red thing? Oh, it's the same thing, but it's New Coke, you know, whatever, you know.
Well, absolutely. I think that there's a direct correlation between the success of a console and how many variations there are, because you look at the success and the price, you know. So obviously with handhelds, it's easier for mom to buy three of them, right? So why not have three different colors, right? Yeah. Whereas for a Super Nintendo, you're only going to have one for your family.
Yeah.
But then a console like the 3DS in the first few years of it was really struggling to take off. You know, it just wasn't, it was kind of like the Wii U syndrome. Just, you know, there was already the Wii, there'd already been the DS, these big consoles, so nobody wanted it. And so then they started pumping out all these special editions, and it kind of started picking up after that with the 3DS. But you see that kind of with the Nintendo 64. It was a really, you know, the PlayStation really cannibalized the sales for the 64. And so you see them take a lot more initiative to kind of, you know, do different colors. And then same with the GameCube. They're like, hey, like, not a super successful console, so here's some new colors. with the Wii, you know, they didn't have that same incentive structure until later on to release different versions, you know, beyond just the white one. So
the white and the black one. It's interesting
to look back at that.
Yeah, the white and black ones probably on the back of kind of like, because that was probably Apple, early Apple era, and it was like, and it was that kind of almost like a part of the family. So a white one or a black one fits into most general living rooms.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the Wii will be the next thing, I suppose. Like someone will kind of go crazy on it and it'll be that. They're here everywhere. Like part of me finds it difficult to you know, flicking through Facebook Marketplace and there's a Wii for like $65 like five times a day. And I'm like, man, should I buy a dozen of these and just put them in a box and then one day hope that clicking it? Because most of them, I'm sure, have barely been used. They've been sitting in a box since Christmas 2012 or whatever and really haven't had much time at all. So they're, in theory, apart from the entropy of just sitting around, they should be in really good condition functionally.
Yeah. Well, and the Wii, I don't know if you've ever soft modded a Wii, but
I have. The Wii,
it's super, super easy and it's like everything. Like can do everything up to the Wii U. It's amazing.
I did my Wii soft mod so it runs off a hard drive like 4 or 5 years ago. I'm sure it's a lot easier now because it was semi-complex back then. And it's been like just chugging along. My wife and I play like Tetris and a bunch of other stuff on it all the time. I just this year got a Wii U and soft modded that. And I was like, I'd never seen like a bunch of stuff. Just even like the Mario Kart, I think it's Mario Kart 8 on that was just like, it was like the Wii Mario Kart, but just so gorgeous. And, you know, in HD and I started playing a little bit of one of the Zeldas, like the Something Sword or whatever, and it was just like so beautiful. And again, it was everybody's done it, so you just jump on YouTube and you get done. The beauty of the Wii U is you can mod them to run like the Wii Virtual Console as well, so then you could play all the Wii stuff like through a Wii U, but you have to swap hard drives, so you can have both work on the Wii U. But you've got to kind of switch your hard drives around. But I almost thought, well, I'm going to pick up another Wii U just to replace the Wii so that I can play like Tetris and everything with my wife in HD because, God, it just looks so much better. I don't understand why the Wii U didn't do great.
Well, and that's the thing. The one to watch, I'd say, the next big one that's going to blow up is Wii U is already, you can see the prices trending up.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's like, I'm looking at some of the games. I'm like, should I buy
Breath
of the Wild for Wii U? Because is it going to be like already like those HD Zelda remakes are already going for more than they were worth initially. So it's, that's the Wii U is going to be GameCube times 10 is my prediction as far as like the collecting scene and just the prices going through the roof. Well,
let's not tell anybody. Let's just keep that to ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah, edit that out right there.
Yeah. Do you have a Wii U?
I do, yeah. So it was like right before I left home, my siblings and I wanted to play 8-player Smash for the Smash for Wii U.
Right.
Because that's the first one that allowed you to do 8-player Smash. And there's five of us. There's 4 boys, 1 girl. So we needed an extra. We needed it. So we like cleaned the garage. We did like a bunch of chores or whatever. And got a Wii U like right before I left for college.
You can get a lot done when there's 5 of you.
Yeah. And now it's, I mean, they all play the Switch or Xbox. So I went ahead and took that in for posterity's sake. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And what's the kind of the highlight of the Wii U for you? I mean, is it that Smash experience or is there like, do you fire it up and just get a, this is really good and this is really great? Or is it more about just, I know it's going to be something and I remember good times on it?
Yeah. So, I mean, I really don't have much memories with the Wii U because I literally played Smash Brothers for like a week with my family and that was it.
Right. But
we also played a lot of Nintendo Land. And that was, we had 2 games. We had Nintendo Land and the Smash Bros. For Wii U.
Right.
And we played, there's like a Mario Chase game on there. It's like a bunch of mini games. And we played Nintendo Land so much. It was, it's just like it's almost like the, it's like the Wii Sports for the Wii U.
Oh, okay.
And that for me in the long run is probably the only reason I would bring out a Wii U. Like I, my wife and I don't use it. It's here purely for just like collection's sake. But if I'm ever with my siblings or something and, yeah. and the Wii U's around, like we'll play Nintendo Land again. Cause I really feel like with the exception of like the Zelda remakes for the Wii U, there's not really a reason to own one, honestly, because you've got Mario Kart 8 Deluxe.
Yeah.
You've got Super Mario 3. Every single game that was good on the Wii U is on the Switch and better. So it's there's really not a huge reason beyond, in my opinion, if those two Zelda remakes, which are amazing, and Nintendo Land. That's the one game that for me holds, you know, there's a little bit of nostalgia, just, you know, that last moment. I'm the oldest, you know, that last moment of me and my siblings, all of us being together, and before I left and broke up the family. So that is a special one for me, I guess.
I just looked up Nintendo Land on I just Googled it, and one of the links was EB Games in Australia. We still have it. It's just hanging in there.
It's probably $5.
I can buy Nintendo Land pre-owned in store for 50 cents.
Yeah. There you go. Yep. It's just, it's a cheap one.
I have this sneaky suspicion. So I should get it. 50 cents. Like one that'll be worth $6. That would have made $5.50. 50 cents. That says something about the game. It's weird. Yeah. It's hardly worth them having on a shelf for 50 cents.
Yeah. No, well, I mean, I'd say it's worth it to pick up. It's not a single player experience. It's one that like you and your daughter would probably get a good hour or two of entertainment out of. And you know, there's a lot of different mini games on there. And so you just find one that you're into. Like I said, we were way into that Mario chase game, like played it for hours. It's really simple, really basic, but you know, there's something for everyone on there. So that's my Wii U recommendation is Nintendo Land.
I'm gonna grab it because I can just put it on. I can just sideload it. I think I'll grab that. And it's funny watching my daughter, kind of her gaming experiences. Like Mario Kart was the first thing I think we really, I think the Wii was, when she grows up, she'll be like, yeah, we had a Wii and that's kind of the first thing we did. And Mario Kart on the Wii was probably the first thing that she kind of mastered. And I said to her when she was starting to get it together, because kids, and even now she still has this, like, they find it very hard. She finds it very hard to make like minor adjustments. There's a lot of oversteer going on, you know, pinballing off this wall and that wall. And then you start to get it together. And eventually, and because of the elastic banding, you know, it also changes how the game works. And I was like, if you ever beat me in Mario Kart, I will give you $20. And oh my God, she just put her game face on and she just got better and better and better. And eventually she did beat me. I was like, any track, you pick the track. I'm dad. You ain't going to beat me. And she beat me. So she got her $20. And then recently.
That's a good dad right there.
It's incentive. And it's good to see her sort of working on it. I mean, we're very outdoorsy sort of family. So I don't have a fear that, you know, I'm teaching my child to be addicted to games because she's very crafty and outdoorsy and stuff. But just a little while back when it came out, we bought Riders Republic on the PS4. And it's this kind of open world, and it's got like mountain biking and snow skiing and wingsuit and stuff like that. And it surprises me. I can kind of be playing it in the morning. I said, then once you come in, I'll be like, I'm going to have a shower. Here you go. And I go back an hour later, and she's just been kind of cruising around on the snowboard, just doing stuff and zoning out. And it's nice to see her be able to. You know, some parents would be like, oh, I can't get my kid off the computer, game, console, whatever. And I'm like, I like to see her just stop and slow down and just be a kid and just play some computer games because they're kind of just dragged along at such a ridiculous pace. You know, apparently she's in grade 5 next year, and apparently she's supposed to know whether she wants to be, you know, an astronaut or a vet. So it's nice to see them just slow down with something that just means nothing.
Yeah. No, that's, I mean, that's definitely my goals for my little girl as well, you know. And yeah, that's,
oh, should we, I mean, should we,
it's
she'll be hanging out in the metaverse apparently.
Yeah, apparently. it's hard to, because I, you know, I grew up in a generation where we, you know, we watched TV and we played outside, you know, we did
both,
and I feel like that's a dying, you know, dying generation kind of. These kids nowadays have a lot of, there's so much tech and there's so much good that can come of that, you know, but it's also, you lose a little bit of that, that in touchness with, you know, being able to go ride your bike outside. So
yeah,
I guess that's maybe another reason why, you know, in the wild is so appealing to me. Cause it's like, you know, I'll take my daughter on a walk and we'll bring a Game Boy and she'll, you know, like hang on real quick, like, you know, give her a little toy or something to hold and then take a quick picture and then continue on our walk. So a lot of these she's helped me take kind of.
Yeah. It's, I think you probably, I don't know what it's like back in Arizona, but you know, you're definitely giving your child the opportunities to be more in touch with the world than someone who's, I don't know, let's just say stuck in the middle of New York, like right in the middle. And apart from the local park with swings and maybe the zoo, all they see is a city skyline. You know, and there's obviously this river and ocean. I'm being very kind of general, but you know, there's a lot of children that live in cities and stuff that they don't know what a mountain range 120 mile away looks like. And it's got to affect the way they think about just themselves in space, in, you know, as in like the space around them. I think your daughter's very lucky to have that, even just at a young age, out with you on the trails, walking around, looking and seeing. And that's a squirrel that doesn't fight for its life. It's a squirrel that's happy to be there, sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it's definitely nice to be in places. Like my whole life, I've always been in places where, you know, you're not too far off from nature of some sort or another. And I definitely get, you know, if I ever do end up in New York City or something, I always end up getting a little suffocated and ready to see some open space again. So yeah, some definite benefit to that.
Yeah. So you guys are on a definite sort of journey, like timeline path back to Arizona. Once you're finished, you're at a specific school for the purpose of the dentistry.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that was, my wife and I knew, like when we got married, we both knew like this is what we're doing, like this is our plan. It's interesting because really since I started my undergraduate, like this is the plan that I had, was to, you know, go to, not necessarily here in Denver, but you know, to go to dental school and then go back to Arizona. So we're kind of on a course for the rest of our lives, and we know exactly what we're doing every day for the rest of our lives kind of. And there's a lot of, for me, you know, a lot of people could get kind of hung up on that or concerned, you know, that they're, you know, kind of a midlife crisis about that. But for me, it's like, I really like that security, you know, knowing that this is where we're going to be. This is how it's going to be. I know that my family's going to be taken care of. And I know that, you know, we're going to be able to, with, you know, with the profession that I've chosen, be able to go on a vacation, you know, go do other things, even though, you know, dentistry is a pretty, you're kind of stuck in one place, you know, it's pretty hard to pick up and set up shop in another state or country, you know,
are you qualified? Like once you're done, will you be able to work anywhere in the US?
No. So when you have to get, I mean, you could, but the process is pretty tedious to pick up and leave. And honestly, the biggest, you know, when you go to the dentist and you see the bill, the biggest expense is actually all the equipment that they're using. You know, it's the building. It's very, very expensive. All the equipment and the staffing of a dental office. And
everything's like more expensive because it's medical, right? Like, you know, like a brush is a brush, but if it's a dental brush, it's a bit like a cake and a wedding cake, and everything's like from certain standards. So it's always going to be, it's easy for someone to walk in and go, why is this so expensive? Well, the air conditioning in this place has to meet exactly this temperature for, you know, humidity and hygiene and all this other stuff, as opposed to a library. If the aircon's not quite working, it's like, people are just a bit warm, you know, there's little tiny bits that make a difference.
Yeah, nailed it on the head right there. Cause it's like, and not only that, but you really have to think, like when you're working in dentistry, you're not just like, it's not like you're working at the grocery store where people are just going to come in and leave. You're building clients, right? You have people who come to you consistently, who know you. And so you start out day one and you open your shop, you know, nobody's going to come there because nobody knows you. Nobody knows the type of dentistry that you do. And so it's hard to pick up and just completely start anew with a whole new patient base. So yeah, you kind of, with dentistry specifically, more so even than medicine, you really have to put down roots and stay there so that you can build a pool of people who come to you and who trust you as their dentist. And so, yeah, we're going to be in Arizona for the rest of our lives,
right?
Until I retire.
But that's kind of home, right? So that was the plan. Like, it's a long
game. Yeah. That's where family is. Yeah. That's where we're going to go. We go there for every Christmas. We're definitely happy to be there.
Yeah. I mean, it's got to be, I can only speak for myself here, but I mean, my dental history isn't great, but I'm just lucky that every time I go, they're like, "No, you're doing all right." And I'm like, "Oh, you don't know half the story." I'm actually quite a lazy sort of, you know, oral hygienist sort of thing. But I've chopped and changed, and it's just like, no, I'm not coming back. They ring you up and this sort of thing. So it's so easy to just walk and give no reason as to why. I mean, half the reason why I changed my dentist because a new one moved in literally 4 minutes walk from my house as opposed to a 20-minute drive. So it's no fault of their own. Would you be on your own? Or because I get the impression we're around here, you have a lot of like dental clinics, and there might be three or four dentists that kind of work within that building under maybe a senior dentist or something like that. Isn't that not the sort of path you'd go down? Or you're just going to open up and open the door and hope someone's got a toothache and in they come and it starts from there?
Yeah, no. So, I mean, it's always today you work with another dentist, and a lot of times you'll end up buying the practice from that dentist,
right?
Or you'll end up you know, opening your own after working there.
Yeah.
Dental groups are super common, you know, corporate dentistry.
Yeah.
So I'll be working with a dentist once I get out, and from there probably buy either that dentist practice or open my own, but something to that line. I'd prefer to stay out of like the corporate scene, because a lot of times, you know, you're not able to make the decision for the patient, you know, if you know something that's best for them in their specific circumstance, but corporate is telling you, no, we only do this here. You know, I'd prefer to be able to have autonomy in that way. So I'd just work under a supervising dentist for a few years and then move on from there, open up my own or buy out an existing practice for a retiring dentist, something like that.
And then you've got that $400,000 like education bill. I think I heard that the college loan that I think this was specific to the US, the college loan, it is the only loan that you cannot go bankrupt on. You will be paying that back. And that's heartbreaking to think that if your life really goes to poop, you're not getting out of that one. That's going to come back. There's only two things that are sure in life, dying and paying back your government education debt.
Yeah, no, it's a pretty intense thing, but, The unemployment rate for dentists in the US, I think, is like 0.01% or something. It's
awesome.
So I'm feeling all right.
Yeah. And
the
diet today of people on average too. I mean, you guys are just, it's a bit like auto smash repairs, you know, everybody's crashing the car and everybody's eating bad food. So you are never going to be out of work.
Yeah, I just have to have a good attitude about it, because if I sit back and look at
for sure
how much we've already racked up, it would be crushing. I wouldn't be doing Game Boys.
No.
So
you must be a particular type of person, because I always think when my dentist is poking around in my mouth, I'm like, all right, yeah, you're used to it. This is a learning curve. You didn't just step out yesterday and go, oh my God, here's a human mouth. There's so much saliva and stuff going on in there. But I've asked my dentist, because recently the one I go to is someone bought the business, and so they got the clients and a whole lot. And I was like, oh, that's pretty interesting. And I asked her, because I like to kind of understand, you know, why are you doing this? I said, you must have a mindset where you enjoy walking into a kind of untidy room, tidying it up, and being happy with yourself about it. Because that's what I imagine going inside someone's mouth is like. It's all a bit grotty, and it's a bit of a grotty bathroom, and you scrubble the mold off and go, ching, and it's all gray. I like, do you have this personality? Are you liking to see mouths?
I mean, that's why I like opening Game Boys.
Yeah, I thought there must have been a link there.
It is the exact same dopamine hit you get from using a little bit of alcohol and cleaning off dirty Game Boy, cleaning out those bugs you find in there is the exact same feeling you get.
Yeah.
Clearing out caries on somebody's tooth. So yeah, it's very, very similar. Obviously, you know, nobody's life is at risk. You don't have to use any needles or drills on a Game Boy, but there's definitely a lot more certification I need to do dentistry, but the payoff, that feeling you get when you've restored a Game Boy, and that's probably the thing I enjoy the most, is just taking a grungy Game Boy, bringing it back to its former glory, and then putting it back out into the wild, giving it to someone or selling it off to someone. That feeling is, that's what I'm chasing in dentistry for sure.
It's often like, I love hearing these kind of like for me, this is almost like a bit of an origin story. Cause if I met a guy, so you're 25, say at 40, right? You've been a dentist for 10, 12, 15 years or whatever, and you got a Game Boy collection. And I'd be like, what the hell does a dentist do with a Game Boy collection? And you're like, this is why a dentist has a Game Boy collection, because it's his dopamine at home on a Sunday evening. And he started that 15 years ago, you know, because I know a couple of lawyers that are right into Noztec and Baron Priseman. And I'm like, I would never have thought a lawyer would have any interest in, you know, retro gaming. You know, and they're just like kind of kids at heart that love it. So it's always amazing to see the diversity amongst the community. But yeah, this is why a dentist has a Game Boy collection, because he started that when he was 25, still at school.
The things you learn.
Things you learn. Yeah, I don't know what else is going on. So what's the Game Boy plan now? I probably asked this question 6 or 7 different ways already, but you're just kind of going to chug on and take photos in the bush with your daughter and just keep them what you want and moving on what you don't? Or does there come a point where school becomes more intense and you're kind of going to have to kind of push things aside? Or do you think you can just keep, this is what gets you away from school, so it'll always be, you know, there?
Yeah. So, I mean, to be honest, I'm in the most intense part right now. this is as hard as it gets, is literally the phase I'm in right now. And I mean, I'm posting every day. So
when do you work on a real mouth? Have you like worked on a real human mouth yet? Teeth, whatever?
Yeah. So we haven't done any surgical stuff yet. So we're not pulling teeth. We're not injecting anybody, but in it, kind of what you do, what a dental hygienist does, we're basically glorified dental hygienists at this point. So we're doing, you know, what you called like the scraping of the teeth, you know, diagnosing, looking at mouths, but haven't taken out the drill yet or anything, but that's coming this March. I'll start doing that. But
are you nervous about the drill? Like on a person?
We work on mannequins. So I've been working on plastic teeth for hours and hours and hours. I've probably done hundreds of teeth already. And so when it comes, and the plastic teeth are much harder to do than actual teeth. And so when it comes to working in an actual mouth, honestly, I'm just looking forward to it at this point. It's like, get me in there. Let's do this thing. Like I'm feeling good about it. I've practiced hundreds and hundreds of hours doing this already, but I'm mostly just excited for that part. And it's honestly, so the first 2 years of dental school is mostly you're in a classroom, you're learning. So like right now I'm doing lots of exams, lots of, you know, you got to learn your pharmacology, anatomy, pathology, you know, all those sciencey classes in general. But so this is the most intense part, because you're learning those clinical skills, but you're also doing lots of school. And then your last 2 years you're practicing, you know, so it's basically just like you're working out a 9 to 5 and you come home and you're done. You know, you don't have to study for an exam.
Right.
So I could foresee more content being made in that situation. But I mean, this time last year, I definitely fell off. I didn't post for about 3 or so months, wasn't doing anything. And then it was kind of this podcast almost that got me a little more interested. And then I started listening to it. Hearing from people that I hadn't talked to for a long time, you know, like Jordan or T, Next Stop Please. And I hearing from them, I'm like, man, like that was really good. Like that really was something that I enjoyed, that kind of took a load off for me. And so I started doing it, and really it's been, you know, especially just with my daughter and stuff, it's been a really good way for me to still have something that I enjoy with all the stresses of school. And I've found time to do it. And as you, like, you know, scheduling this podcast was definitely a long endeavor for us both.
Yeah. I think we've been working on this for about 3 months or something, haven't we?
Yeah. Yeah. But it's still just finding time to do it just on the off times has been really, really nice for me to have an outlet of my own. So like this is the busiest time. This is as busy as it gets. And
thank you for taking your time out the busiest time.
But I mean, I'm saying that just generally, not to throw you under the bus, but
no,
just like,
that's all right.
Just talking like this is a great, like, you know, I've been studying, doing work all day.
Yeah.
So it's nice to not do that for a little bit, to sit and talk about stuff that I'm passionate about. You know?
And it is nice to talk about Game Boys and stuff. Like, I kind of caught up with a few of the guys from around here, like once a month. Everybody's kind of pretty busy end of the year, and you know, I do miss that, just catching up and just comparing and looking, and you know, someone's got an expensive this, or someone's just played that, or whatever. And I don't have this opportunity anywhere else in my life to talk about Game Boys and Game Boy games or any of that sort of stuff. At least half the reason why I do this podcast is so that I can meet people and have the conversations. And it's just so happened, this wonderful world of tech, we can record it and other people can also enjoy the conversation. The community is so good that everybody I've ever asked has sort of gone, yeah, I guess. And then you just have that really great conversation. It's such a language of just, it's not often that you find something. I find that every single person in this community I've ever spoken to or communicated with seems to have that same level of, aren't these cool? Aren't these just really cool? Aren't these just really fun? You know, there's some people that really, you know, Greg and that from Game Changer, I guess there's less like, are these really cool? Because they are literally just punching them out. And it's not to say they don't love them, but their angle of what they're getting from at the Game Boy is a little different, a little more serious. But anybody that's a collector or a modder or stuff in that's, you know, especially like it kind of took me a while to understand buttons. You know, we're looking at people that are casting buttons or this button or looking at that button and just even color combinations for a while there. I was like, I'm a bit of a purist and I'm like, I don't get it. But I think it's starting to sink in now, just the freedom, the flexibility to just take, and I start to see it. Someone will post something with buttons and then like 3 months later, they'll be like, I changed this button and I nailed it. And you're like, oh my God, that does aesthetically make me feel really pleased looking at that. It's so cool and so simple. Anybody can buy, like you said, a Game Boy and flip it with different buttons and a new lens, and you feel like you've achieved something. Or you can go crazy like Nat the Nerd and do open heart surgery and give it six arms, and you know, it can jump 50 feet high. There's no end to what you can do.
Yeah. Well, and it really is just that community, I think, is another thing that just kind of brought me out of that little hiatus that I took. Was just like I said, it was honestly like this podcast, I owe a lot to you know what you're doing here, just having people come on and hearing people.
Appreciate that.
It reminded me of just like there's such great people here, like, and it's so good what you're doing to like get people together and talk about stuff, because it's like it's talking to those people, and seeing what they do, being inspired by what they do, meeting your heroes. I've started talking to BB Retro, which for me is like, whoa, like that's like an account that I really look up to for the pictures and stuff. And
yeah,
so to be able to like meet people like that and have them, you know, comment on your stuff and give you pointers is really exciting. And for me, all that it does is it makes the content that I make better. And I think that it makes me more of an amalgamation of everyone else, you know, because it gets me interested in other stuff when I see what they're doing, the types of pictures they're taking. It's just inspiring.
It is cool. Photography is so much fun, especially with the phones and stuff these days. And you know, it's very rare that I don't throw in a couple of filters just because rarely my photography is good enough, but you throw in just a bit of vignette and a bit of lens blur and all of a sudden it's funny looking at photos. I will sometimes post like the photo after it's been kind of like slightly, you know, whether it be just a little bit of saturation or a little bit of vignette, a little bit of lens blur, and then I'll post that, and then the second picture will be just the thing sitting there, and just to show people that it originally was just a situation and I just placed it, and then you can just have so much fun from there. And that's really good. It's very difficult to do that with a PS5. Put it in a paddock or in a creek or all the other stuff that I've seen some of you guys do, like when there's those.
I've been struggling getting a PVM in the wild. A few days ago I tried to post one. I put it on the second picture. I think it's like a Metroid Prime Echoes
with the cartridge there.
The second picture on that was my wild pick, and it's not quite to the standard of what I wanted. Neither of those are. They're just like, I see accounts like OG or Zero G Retro, Ryan.
Yeah.
He does such good PVM photography. Same with, did somebody say retro? And it's like, those are the goals. That's the next hurdle I have to overcome, is taking good pictures of a PVM, because that's hard.
Well, if you've got a pool and beer, you can check out NozTech, because
I've seen his stuff. It's good.
As far as I know, well, if you didn't, I do know him a little better, but if you didn't know him, you'd think this dude owns a PVM, he owns a swimming pool, he likes beer, and he loves Grand Theft Auto, because a lot of those pigs are like, he's sitting by the pool drinking beer playing GTA on a Sunday. Son of a bitch.
That's most of what I know about him.
It's a tough life. Cool. Well, look, unless you sort of got much else to say, I really appreciate your time. I know you kind of, you put everybody to bed, and now it's time for you to go to bed on a Saturday night. So I do appreciate your time, and then we can sort of roll into some shout outs and stuff if you like, or if you've got anything else you want to talk about. Mine this week for this episode is his human name is Johnny, but he's Retro Gamer X 1987. Johnny is actually from Melbourne, Australia. So, and it's one of those accounts that's just very, it's a good spread of, you know, there's Xbox stuff there, there's PS2 stuff, and there's some older stuff and newer stuff, and, you know, there's a NES and Dreamcast, and he's got some really cool stuff. Really appreciate it. It's got a really nice, a lot of kind of cool Mario off to the side stuff. Like, he's got a bit of a thing for Luigi, which reminds me, when you mentioned it before, I'm gonna have to play a bit of Luigi's Mansion. I'm about a quarter through on the GameCube, and it's one of those games that it doesn't demand much of you. You can just enjoy it, and every now and then you get a bit frightened, or a bit sort of not frightened, you get a little bit surprised, and you got to kind of work it out. But good fun, hey. Johnny, Retro Gamer X 1987, really cool little account. If you're a bit of arcade and collectible stuff in there too, so if that's what you're into, check him out. And I'll just go through, I've sort of jotted down a few of the people that you've mentioned. You can elaborate or add to the list. We've talked about, just in no particular order, Cypher Design and Peg City, 8-Bit, Jamesy Plays, Blue Squirrel, Julianne, which is Gameboy.7777. Did somebody say Retro, Zero, G Retro, NozTech, BB Retro, Kelly at Next Stop Please, and Retro Gaming Dad. So, I mean, it's a big community, and I always feel a little bit bad when I put people on the spot. Good luck. Go for it.
Oh, man. Well, that's the list right there. Honestly, I would just say every single person that you've had on, it are people that all should be looked at and should be like considered. Like, if you're looking for amazing retro content, like every single person that you've had on are all amazing, amazing accounts. And a lot of those people are people that I'd like shout out very number one. But I was looking at people who hadn't been on, because listened to the show, and just people that haven't been on yet, who I think have been mentioned in the past, but just we haven't heard from yet, who are really, really cool accounts.
Yeah.
You got Take Zoe Toro.
Yeah, yeah. On my list.
You got Condition OK, doing all that psych deck stuff.
Yep.
Two that are near and dear to my heart, because they're doing Game Boy in the Wild content, are Outdoor Gamer. Is kind of a brand new account,
right?
Just started up a few months ago, doing very similar content to what I'm doing. So I'm all about that. Kainoa's Mods, just a really nice guy. Kainoa, I've talked with him quite a bit. Really cool.
How do you spell Kainoa?
It's K-I-A, and then Noah, N-O-A-H.
Right.
Yeah, Kainoa. Yeah, he's just doing some cool Game Boys in the Wild. And if you want to be my friend, just take a picture of a Game Boy outside and we'll be fast friends.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Another account that I've been really impressed with is Noodles Mods.
Oh, yeah. Coming up more and more. I think people are starting to pay attention.
Guy from Germany. Yeah. Super, super cool. I feel like he's got like a new build every single day. It's crazy. That guy.
And he makes me hungry every time I look at him. His stuff.
Yeah. Well, and his photography is really, really good. I'm really impressed with his pictures.
Yeah.
And then obviously, I already mentioned Mr. Game and Switch. Super cool guy.
Yeah.
Just another guy who had shout out. More so part of the gaming community, I'd say, like the Nintendo gaming community, but I tend to bleed into that more and more as I've not always, I'm not like a heavy duty modder. A lot of times I'm just kind of like a Nintendo collector. So I kind of run with those people too. So he's another cool guy who just been talking to recently, was thinking of him. So those are the only other ones that I would add in addition to just all the people you've had on are definitely really, really cool. Cool cats.
Oh yeah, I'm looking at Mr. Game and Switch now, and I'm like, oh yeah, I see why you two roll together. Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, he's a cool guy.
What is this thing here? What is this? Sorry, I'm looking at it. It's like a muscle bound Charizard.
Oh yeah, he's like a series of.
What is that? Those.
He's got like
a muscle bound Charmander. Is he done like a trend? I need to look into this offline. Is he done are they his sculpts, or are they like, well, there's look, there's the Squirtle Squad with the glasses, Squirtle.
He's got like an Ivysaur as well, or.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I don't know much about Pokemon. I think that's Ivysaur.
You don't know much about Pokemon?
Nope.
It's so rare, and I find it refreshing because I know enough to get me by. I played a couple of games and stuff, but. Yeah,
Pokemon, that's a character in Smash Bros.
Yeah,
for me.
Yeah, I'm just so fascinated often by how something is just so big and it just really grabs people. And yeah, Pokemon just seems to have this, like, it's one of those things that you're like, it's never going to die. They're always going to find a way to make it kind of work. Everywhere from my sort of, you know, when my daughter and I were mucking around with it, whether it be cards or some game stuff, you know, from an 8-year-old that Pokemon's been out forever, right up to current 40-year-olds that kind of picked it up when it was legit. It's just such this thread through time.
I mean, I feel that I've started to play like just on the side, like Pokemon Red, just some of those original ones, just to kind of get a feel for it. But Part of it was I had some cousins growing up who were really into Pokemon. They were a little older than me.
Yeah.
And my mom always growing up said Pokemon was bad. Like, that's a bad show. Like, we're not, like, right. That show's bad. We're not allowed to watch it. Not because Pokemon was bad, actually, but because she didn't want me to hang out with those cousins.
Oh, right.
she thought, she's like, I don't want you to, she didn't want me to be like in at with them always going over to their house to play Pokemon.
Yeah. Identify with them.
So all growing up, that maybe is another reason why we never had Game Boys or anything. Mm. Was just like, she was like not having it. What didn't want us running with that crowd, and you know, and in retrospect, I guess I'm glad that didn't hang out with those cousins. But now I'm like, you know, I'm in a community that's very, very into Pokemon, so I feel like it's my duty to at least give it its due diligence. And I definitely see the appeal. Like, I, you know, here I am, however many years, you know, after it was, you know, its 20th anniversary, and, you know, I'm a I'm in my mid-20s and I'm playing Pokemon Red on a DMG and I'm loving it. Like it still holds up today. So that's impressive to me.
Yeah. I mean, my daughter and I, apart from playing a bunch of the card game and a bunch of sort of, we'd still play a little bit of Pokemon Go. I am a bit of a closet Pokemon Go player because it kind of just runs in my car and I have like a modified Go Plus that auto catches. So it's just sort of doing stuff. It's a bit like having a fish tank. More fish turn up every day. It's really easy. And it cleans itself. But aside from that, I mean, my daughter and I, we watched like the first maybe 5 or 6 seasons, maybe 10 seasons of Pokemon. And I think we got a fair idea what it's all about. You know, like most times when it's obviously we're not aware of all the Pokemon that ever existed, but we can kind of, we can pick it when it's being referred to, or even my daughter now is getting old enough to sort of go, oh, that's a Pokemon ripoff. And like, you're right. So I think we've seen enough to know that we know what's going on. And it is kind of cool. It was interesting though, to sort of make those decisions. I mean, the card game was a bit hard because it's like we went through a year there or two where we just bought stacks of boosters all the time and bought some booster boxes and things like that. And I was like, I am fully supporting gambling here and it's fun and we love pulling the boosters, but I had to say to her, look, I don't like this anymore. A, it's costing me a lot of money, and B, we're just not getting what we wanted. And to talk with her about like, let's get a booster box at the beginning of like a expansion and then we'll speak to the guys that get a lot and we'll buy the ones we need individually. She's like, yep, let's do that. We just want to collect. Mm. We don't necessarily have to throw that money down the drain. But also the whole like nothing dies, everything just gets defeated and Pokemon don't ever disappear. They just go back to Professor what's his name. So there's lots of stuff to like about it versus, you know, other. Yeah. We were watching this morning, my daughter and I, for some reason on YouTube, were watching like some old G.I. Joe, and like these four thugs were just beating these two chicks up in a bar. And it was just like, oh my God, this is what they were teaching boys in the 70s and 80s. Like, I know we have rescue. I know we have violence and stuff, but I was just like, this is a cartoon for selling toys. And these chicks are getting wailed on in this bar. This is insane. Yeah. Okay. So Pokemon wasn't too bad in comparison.
No, absolutely. Yeah. In retrospect, I realized that my mom told me a lie for my own good.
Yeah, that's right.
I love her for it. Still my mom, still love her, but like it was a lie.
Yeah.
Pokemon's all right.
But maybe thanks to that, soon you're going to be a dentist and it'll be all right.
Yeah, it'll be okay.
That's right. All right, buddy. Like I said, I do appreciate you coming on here. And I love walking away from these conversations feeling like I got to know someone. And I hope that anybody that's listening, that whether they are regular chatters with you via DMs or other means, or whether they're not, that, you know, they've got to know Mason Game Boys in the Wild a little better. It's always an opportunity to kind of pull back the curtain. And Game Boys are cool, but, you know, it's the humans behind all this. So anybody that's listening, go check out Mason. Go check out Game Boys in the Wild. All this, everybody we've mentioned, including your account, will be in the show notes. And if you have anybody else you think of later, just shoot me those and we'll slap them up there too, because the more the merrier. That's what awesome. The community's about.
Awesome. Yeah, buddy. I appreciate it, Scott.
No worries, man. We got it done. I think it took us 3 or 4 months of real life, but we got it done, and I'm super happy to have finally got it done.
Awesome.
All right, buddy. Awesome.
Well, thank you, sir.
No worries. No, thank you. Thank you. You are the sir. I'll catch you around the traps, hey? And I will – you got me all fired up. We're going to take 6 Game Boys down the paddock this afternoon and throw them in the rocks and trees and see what I come up with.
Let's do it.
All right, buddy. You take it easy. Have a great weekend, hey?
All right. You too. We'll see you.
Okay, mate. Bye.